You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Queen's Podcast, where Katie and Nathan are about to spill all the juicy details on yet another incredible queen with a little bit of spicy language, or maybe even a lot of spicy language. Alicia
and Stacy here from Trashy Royals, the podcast all about naughty nobles and our betters behaving badly. We wanted to let you know about the very real possibility of strong language in the following episode. Proceed as you wish.
Hi, this is Katie.
And this is Nathan.
And you're listening to Queen's Podcast, the show about badass women in history.
Well, hello, Nathan.
I think it's that time again where we talk about some awesome women.
Yes. Welcome to Queen's Podcast, everybody. If this is your first time tuning in, my name is Katie, and this is my lovely co-host, Nathan. Nathan, how are you today?
I am fabulous. Everything's feeling great.
I love this for you. So, Nathan, who are we talking about today?
Yolande of Aragon. Mm. And who is she? Who is she, though?
Who is she?
Yolande was a major player in the Hundred Years' War between France and England as a well-known woman who's bankrolling this whole entire gal pal known as Joan of Arc.
Maybe you've heard of her. Nathan, tell us about this cocktail.
We are making the French One Honey.
Ooh, French 100. I love it.
It's a take on the French 75, which is a classic drink mm-hmm. that includes gin. And I was like, me and Katie don't like gin.
We're not huge gin fans around here. Sorry, gin drinkers.
Sorry about it. But I made the French 100, which just substituted. It's a shot of vodka with a little bit of lemon. And you shake it up, put it in a glass, top it with champagne. And use a little bit of rosemary and lemon to garnish.
That looks delightful.
She's gorgeous, is she not?
She's gorgeous. She's beautiful. She's Grace. This is delicious. I love it. We really do need to just sit down and finally make that cocktail cookbook.
I know, right?
It'd be such a cool... Let us know if you would buy like a coffee table cocktail cookbook. We could do on one page the recipe, a picture of the cocktail, and then the next page we could do like a short biography of the woman that inspired it. So let us know if that's something that you'd want. But
and we should totally disclaimer it with, please don't drink all of these drinks at once.
No! Space it out.
One at a time.
Please
read about the woman.
Please enjoy responsibly. Yes. Okay, but before we get into the story, we've got some Patreon shoutouts.
Yes.
Okay. We want to thank our new Patreon supporters, Catherine, Colette, Tori, and Zoe.
Raven, Caroline, Elizabeth, and Sinead.
Thank you, everybody. And thank you to all of our Patreon supporters, as well as all of our, everybody. If you're here.
Everybody.
Thanks for being here. But speaking of Patreon supporters, we are doing this thing this season where we allow our queen mother Patreon supporters to choose the next queen we're going to cover. So we are going to do a drawing. We're going to do a drawing and choose the Patreon supporter that gets to choose the next queen. So Nathan.
I'm doing some... Do you hear the thumb?
Oh, are you doing a drum roll?
Yes.
A drum roll, please.
The drum roll. The drum roll. Who is it?
All right. And so earlier we had Siri pick a number between 1 and 20, which are the people that said that they wanted to participate. And we picked number 5, which is Patreon supporter Kyle. So Kyle, we will be sliding in to your DMs.
What do you want to hear?
We'll be like, hey, Kyle, you up? So it's going to be fun. All right, cool. So anyway, on to the story. Yolande of Aragon. Nathan, tell us, when was she born?
August 11th, 1384. So she's a Leo.
Of course she is.
I love a good Leo energy. She was born in Aragon, modern day Spain.
Yes. Now let's go ahead and get something out of the way. In case you've never, if this is one of your first Queens episodes that you're tuning in on, ye old timey Spain is a soap opera. We've seen it in several episodes that we've covered before. There's always fighting. There's always infighting. There's always fighting with other countries. And yeah, it's just always really dramatic.
And there are always inheritance disputes.
Yeah.
This is all relevant, we promise.
Yes.
But let's just meet Yolanda's family.
Yes. Her dad, King, was John I, King of Aragon. And her mom was actually King John's second wife. She was a French princess. She was the granddaughter of the French king. Her name was Violante. No, I think it's it's in French, so it's probably like Violon. She was Mama V. Mama V was smart as fuck, let me tell you what.
Yeah, and it's important to note that this is in the middle of the Hundred Years' War against France and England. And John, Team France, and mom is French, and dad is a complete Francophile.
Oh my gosh.
So it's totally possible that her first language would have been French, not Spanish.
If you see her name written down, it's spelled Yolande. And that's how she's always referred to in history. And so I went on Twitter and I was like, Spanish speakers, how would you pronounce this name? Like, do you pronounce the E? And everyone was sort of like, well, that seems to be the French spelling. And I was like, huh. And the more I learned about her upbringing and how France was such much more of an influence in her upbringing, I bet French was her first language. And that's why, and it probably was. So I found that interesting, even though they're in Spain. So that's a rabbit hole, a weird little linguistic rabbit hole that I went down.
So when Violante marries John, he has 5 kids with his first wife, but only one was still living, a little girl named Juana.
Isn't that so sad to have 5 kids and only one survive? But now he's going to repeat it all again, because pretty soon after the marriage, John, mom and dad start having babies on babies on babies on babies, but only one of them survive. And that's our girl, Yolande.
And sadly, dad wasn't really great at this whole kinging thing.
No.
He liked poetry and music and largely left a lot of the running shit up to his wife, which Mama V held the title of Lieutenant Queen.
Ooh.
Which basically means she was running this shit.
I feel like that should be one of the names of our tiers on Patreon, Lieutenant Queen. I like that. It's giving very, like, yes, sir. I don't know, like, very militant.
I'm a Lieutenant Queen.
Yes.
Militant Queen.
Yes. So Yolande, because of this, Yolande saw from a very young age how women could yield power. You know, maybe not necessarily be the ones that held the title and the power themselves, but Mama was definitely the one calling the shots. And she saw that from a very young age, that women could, you know, be intelligent and powerful. Go figure.
Imagine that.
Huh.
You can raise a human being, so therefore you can raise an army. Huh.
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 Huh. Anyway.
Imagine that.
But I will say, in the grand scheme of things, mom and dad's rule wasn't super, super popular, because during their time, Aragon lost a bunch of land. I mean, land is money, you know, land is power. Yeah, they weren't super popular during this time. He was kind of viewed as a weak queen, a weak king as well.
Yeah, and the early years of Yolande's life wouldn't have been that noteworthy.
Yeah.
It's said that her parents loved troubadour poetry and mm-hmm. music, as well as fashion and parties. So she was probably introduced to a lot of that in her youth. But nothing really noteworthy happened in her life.
Yeah. Do you remember in our Eleanor of Aquitaine episodes, we talked about, like, the troubadour style? Do you remember in the Disney Robin Hood with the foxes, you know, the little chicken walking around at the beginning with the little guitar being like, doo, 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 doo. He was supposed to be a troubadour. So, useless facts. That's her childhood was pretty uneventful, pretty chill, until it wasn't. And a whole bunch of drama went down. King John, what you need to know is that her dad has not named an heir. He only has two daughters, and he's still hoping that one of his sons will be born and, like, survive childhood. And so he hasn't named an heir, which is what we in the industry call a rookie mistake.
Yeah. Queen's Podcast official stance is you always name an heir.
You always name an heir.
Follow us for more practical kingdom advice.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, one day King John went hunting and he fell from his horse and he died. I feel like something is missing in that story, but I couldn't find anything else. But it kind of sounds like to me, oh, our king kind of sucks. And then he just goes horseback, like he goes hunting and falls from his horse and dies. And everyone's just like, oh, no, it just doesn't. Whoopsie. Maybe that should have been researched a little. What's going on here? More. Like, well, should we do like some cold cases? We should ask Tandy.
We should ask Tandy, did somebody push him from his horse?
Did he fall from his horse, but then somebody, you know, strangled him or something? I was like, it just seems too convenient, but I couldn't find anything.
Oh, how convenient. And now it's time for the contenders of the throne.
Ooh, yes. Who will be the next ruler of Aragon?
In this corner, we have 11-year-old Yolande. 11. She's a child. She's a girl, so, and I don't mean to say that so negatively, but this is going to be a tough sell to everyone else. Yeah. However, she has a mother who's been running the country as queen lieutenant for like 7 years.
Yeah.
So there's that.
And then in this corner, we have John's brother, Martin, Yolande's uncle. Martin is a full-ass adult man who already has a full-ass adult son. He has a son that's 20 years old. So that means that there should be like a peaceful transfer of power. You know what I mean? Like because that's a big concern to people is like, well, what happens when he dies? If he's already got a grown-ass adult son, that puts him ahead in the race. You know what I mean? However, Martin is the regent of Sicily, which we just really don't have time, but the kings of Aragon at this time kind of claimed to be kings of Sicily with little asterisks. Like, it's confusing. So he's over in Sicily putting down a rebellion there. So he is super occupied.
Yeah. And if we didn't think that it was just in one corner or two corners,
there's three corners.
What? No.
What?
And in the third corner, we have Yolande's older sister, Ioana. And Ioana was in her 20s and was married to the Count of Foix. And so, yes, she's a woman, but she's the oldest surviving child. And she has a backing of a very rich husband.
Yeah. Honestly, I think Ioana had the best claim. Because, I mean, yeah, she's the oldest one. It wasn't completely unheard of for a woman to rule in Spain if she had a husband who was like politically minded. So I honestly think she had the best claim, but uterus, you know?
Oh, fucking. It's just floating around.
It's just.
And because uteruses scare people.
They just floating around.
They don't know what they're doing. Oh my God, she's so crazy. The public opinion was anti-uterus in Martin's favor.
Yes.
Ironically, though, he can't come and hold down the fort right away because Sicily is having a wee bit of little unrest.
Yeah.
And he decides to send his wife because, a woman should.
Isn't that fun? Isn't that ironic? He sends his wife. Her name.
Don't you think?
Her name is Maria de Luna. And she is cool as fuck. I don't think she has enough information to be her own episode, but I think she would make a great Patreon episode because she is really powerful in her own right. And you know how we have that thing that we're always like, we love this historical figure. And then we learn about like how they treated the Jewish community in their country. And we go, oh, no, she's the opposite. Like, I mean, she wasn't exactly making Jewish people part of her privy council or whatever. But she was like being like, hey, maybe we don't make them wear big yellow stars. Hey, maybe we don't kill them just because they're Jewish. You know, like, so anyway, Maria de Luna, Patreon. What do you think, Nathan?
Oh, absolutely. And she rocks on up with a huge army and immediately squashes Sister Ioana's army. And to be honest, That's the last we hear, Buwana. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yep. She's done. And when Maria goes to kick Yolande and Mom out of town, Mama V says, "You can't do that. I'm pregnant." Dramatic music. Bum, 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 bum.
And Yolanda's like, "What? You are?"
And Mom is like, "Shh, shut the fuck up."
And most historians agree that this was a tactic. But we have no way of knowing that for sure. But the new queen then proceeded to lock Mama V and Yolande up in ye olde dusty castle.
Yeah.
And then imprisons everyone who had ever been friends with Mama. So it doesn't sound
it's
like...
It's a bit harsh.
When you're good to Mama, Mama ain't good to
no.
you. She ain't.
Okay, but Nathan, question. Why would it have mattered if Mama was pregnant?
I mean, that's the next heir. That's the next, like...
Because if she had a boy, everyone else is out of the running anyway, right? Even if it's if it's an infant, if it had been a boy.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't have a uterus. Can it speak? No. It is our king. Yeah, like...
It's so true.
Bag of dicks, bag of dicks. History is.
History is. Bag of dicks.
Yes. Anyway.
So after a few months, it became apparent that Mama was not going to give birth. And Yolande and her mom are kicked out of court.
Yeah. When we talk about adult Yolande, I feel like everything we just discussed is such part of like her formative years. Do you know what I mean? She's going to be hard-headed. She's going to take chances. She's going to have a flair for drama. And I feel like everything we just discussed in its own could have been a such a cool little mini series. So there's a drama with her mama.
The drama with her mama keeps consisting.
Yes.
Because it's mama against her, against the world.
Yes.
And Violante decides she's dedicating her life to educating her daughter. Like, these are the families of Aragon you need to keep your eyes on. And these are the people in France you can rely on.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, you need to know about the English kings and everything before you're about to go into the Hundred Years' War, because that's a whole thing.
I'm just imagining in my head, like, those montage things in movies where it's just a bunch of clips of you, like, studying and looking at a map. And like, in the background, it's like, you better work, bitch. And just, like, of her, like, becoming, like, a political mastermind with her mom. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's take a second to think, though. Yolande is 11. Everything that just went down, how would this have affected her? In 1 year, her dad dies. She sees every living relative she has basically fight each other and do just, I'm sure, say and do some nasty shit. And then she gets locked up in ye olde dusty castle for, I don't know, 6 months or something like that. And then she gets kicked out of the only home she's ever known. So that's rough.
This is some soap opera shit.
Exactly. That's like what I'm saying.
How you raise a villain.
Yes. It is giving villain origin story. 100%.
But y'all, she's 11 years old. And when you're a princess in ye olde Europe, that's past your
prime. Past my prime.
But y'all, she's 11 years old. And when you're a princess in ye olde Europe, that is past your prime.
Ugh, getting up there. God, who would ever want her?
She's an old maid. Time to get her married, though. And the King of England comes knocking on heaven's door.
Yes. So this is the first time in several times in this episode where we are going to have some cross references. Longtime listeners of a podcast will remember whenever we did that Isabeau of Bavaria series. And so it's going to be like the first time that that topic and this topic intersects, because the dude that comes knocking on her door is a king of England known as Richard II. He's in his mid-20s and she's 11. So Nathan, what do we call that? On a scale of 1 to 10, how gross is that? 14?
it's quite severe.
Yeah. But then the French king and French queen are like, no. And they swoop in. They're like, no, marry our daughter instead. Do you remember this, Nathan? Then the English king, who's in his mid-20s, marries the French princess Isabella that is 8 years old. 8. I hate it here.
Because it's not going to make it better.
I mean, yeah. There was like strict rule, and like we did a whole Patreon episode about this marriage and everything, and there were very strict rules in place about like, you cannot have sex with our 8-year-old. But you know what? That should never even be part of the conversation.
No, that seems logical.
Anyway.
So yeah, listen to the Isabeau of Bavaria episode and you know that whole story. Yeah, yeah. And if not, just please check it out because this is not a fun time.
No, but their stories cross paths a lot.
Anyway, she's not going to be the Queen of England, but that's okay.
It's okay.
She's still hot.
Yeah.
She's a commodity. She's on the marriage market.
Yep.
At age 11.
What? And then that's when Louis, Duke of Anjou's mom, sends Mama V like an email. Just like, hey girl, what's up? You have a single daughter. I have a single son. So much money. I also have so much money. What if we put those monies together? You see where I'm going here? You see where I'm going here? Let's talk.
Gross.
I know.
It's gross, but we don't fully have the time to go into it. But yeah. Louis had been crowned the King of Naples, but Aragon also had claim to Naples.
So confusing.
And I really just don't want to get into
It's so confusing. Like, I did try. I was like, I want to understand this better. And after an hour and I still didn't fully understand it, I was like, oh, it doesn't matter. Yeah. So both of their countries have claim to being the ruler of Naples. Because if you look on the map, Anjou and Aragon, if you're taking your boat to Naples, it's the same. They're gonna cross paths. And so it was like, let's just make like a peace treaty and just be chill about it. And not attack each other in the water when the other one is trying to get to Naples, which I support. Hey, let's not attack each other.
Fair.
Fair. But yeah, at first, Yolande was like, absolutely not. Hard no. She even like signs this document in public. It was like a whole ceremony of her signing this promise to not marry the Duke of Anjou, which I couldn't find more information on. Like, was that normal? what the fuck was that? Like, why? Like,
where did this come from?
I couldn't find more information on that, I just thought that was fucking weird. But I have to wonder if maybe Mama V had been like, no, don't marry that guy. And she's just like, you got it.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. History? Probably. but then her uncle Martin, aka King of Aragon, told her, no. You're marrying same dude.
Yeah.
And she went kicking and screaming to their first meeting. And then she abruptly changed her mind when she met him.
What? Let's speculate. Let's pull on up to the speculation station. Why do we think she changed? Maybe he was hot.
Maybe so. And maybe she's like, wait, what, huh?
Yeah. Or maybe she was just like, I don't actually have any say in this anyway, so I may as well just do it. Do you know what I mean?
I think that's probably more likely the standpoint.
Either way, once she actually met him, she changed his mind. They were married in the year 1400. Yolande was 15. Louis was 22.
Barf.
But, I mean, we've seen worse. At least she's not 8 and he's 28. You know, we've definitely seen... It's not like Margaret Beaufort where she's 13. Because, I mean, 15 is obviously, in my scholarly opinion, too young to get married. But at least by then, like, maybe you've hit puberty. We've seen worse, is what I'm getting at.
Yes. And Yolande is now the Duchess of Anjou, Countess of Maine, Countess of Provence, and Countess of Piedmont. And depending on who you talk to, sometimes she's also the Queen of Naples.
Yeah. So that's not
a bad resume.
That is not a bad resume. Okay, cool. So we have set her up where she is sitting pretty, being very powerful, being very rich with a whole bunch of titles. I think I need to take a quick break and top off my drink before we go on. What do you think, Nathan?
Me too.
Yes.
I'm Helena Bonham Carter, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Secret Heroes. A new series of rarely heard tales from World War II.
They had no idea that she was Britain's top female codebreaker.
We'll hear of daring risk takers.
What she was offering to do was to ski in over the high Carpathian Mountains.
Of course it was dangerous, but danger was his friend.
Subscribe to History's Secret Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course, you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
They've done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
And we are back. Nathan, should we meet the hubby? Should we meet Louis?
Shall we? Louis the Second of Anjou was also a grandchild of the King of France. They are like second cousins, y'all. And his dad died when he was young, so he'd been Duke of Anjou since he was like 7 years old.
We at Queen's Podcast would consider seven to be a baby. And Nathan, what do we say about babies?
Babies don't need jobs.
Babies don't need jobs. And babies don't need to be dukes. We also have onesies on our merch store that say babies don't need jobs. If you would like your baby to...
Babies don't need to be not dukes.
Babies don't need to be dukes. No.
Put your dukes up. And the baby is not one.
And so long as one of those dukes is not a baby.
This is such a wild time in European history. We've got the Hundred Years' War. We have a civil war in France. We got Spain being super dramatic all the time because it's soap opera. And we've got two popes. Two popes. A de pope.
We got two de pope.
And a ant a pope.
Popa, no, I'm a da popa. Yeah.
Oh, we don't have time to explain this.
I think we have a Patreon episode about the anti-pope, like explaining what that was. I mean, that's kind of old, but yeah. Yeah. So Louis's father on his deathbed was like, I want my son to be king of Naples, which I'm like, that is a lot to put on a 7 year old. When Louis was 12, the anti-pope named him king of Naples. But the normal pope backed some other dude. It is so fucking confusing.
But by the time of his marriage to Yolande, someone else was actually ruling Naples. And he pretty much lost all support because the antipope died.
He had died. But sorry.
He still would have called himself king of Naples. And Yolande often called herself queen of Aragon. Like, they ruled in the name of
delusion. Despite not having the active titles of king and queen, they had a shitload of other titles. Like, they were fine. Yeah, the Duke of Anjou. Anjou was a very, very powerful and very, very rich region. So they might not be kings and queens, but they are fine. Like, let's not feel sorry for them.
But how did they get along?
Thankfully, we think they might have, like, actually loved each other. Which, like, for modern day marriages, you're like, well, I fucking hope so. But back then, that wasn't necessarily a given, you know?
Nope.
I think Yolande liked how ambitious he was. And I think Louis liked that she had the kind of training needed to, like, run shit when he wasn't around.
Yeah. And he wasn't around pretty often.
Yeah.
Because in case you haven't figured it out yet, there's just nonstop wars.
All the time.
All the time.
War. Huh. Oh. Good God, yo.
What is it good for? France and England, nothing.
But for the day, they would have been considered, it would have been considered a happy marriage, and they were a power couple.
Yes, I love that. Back then, for a marriage to be considered a quote-unquote success, that also means you gotta have babies on babies on babies on babies. And they did. But not right away. Thank God. Their first son, Louis, was born like about 3 or 4 years after their marriage. So Yolande is like 19. which is a lot less gross than some other situations that we've... It's not Margaret Beaufort, you know, having a baby at 13. Thank God.
Yeah, so you know. Let's fast forward. Zip. Past that grossness. And the next year, Yolande had a baby girl named Marie. And over the next 10 years, they had 5 children. And it seems like they all lived to be adults, which is kind of very rare for the time.
I mean, I have to imagine as Yolande, because, you know, she grew up, she wouldn't have known her dad's first marriage, but in her mom and dad's marriage, she had 4 siblings that didn't survive, you know? So she, as a mother, you must be like bracing yourself like, oh shit, some of these kids aren't going to live. And when they all did, how nice, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'm just very happy for her for that, you know?
Yes.
So after Marie, she then had a little boy named Renee, and after him was a girl named Yolande, because, you know, they're not creative with names here.
Not at all.
And then lastly, they had a boy named Charles, named after the French king, Charles VI.
That doesn't seem like a subtle dig. but just like her mom, Yolande was a fiercely protective mother. And as far as we can tell, she kept her kids at home with her instead of sending them off to be, like, educated at somebody else's court.
Yeah, we've talked about that in this show a lot. People get sent off somewhere else to be raised. Mm-hmm. I think we were talking about it in the Catherine Howard episode where it was like, well, 1, so they learn other cultures, and 2, so their parents don't spoil them. So that makes me feel like she's like, I want to spoil my fucking kids. Good for her. Yep.
Proud of her.
Yeah.
Now, let's get into politics. Mm-hmm. So, Louis and Yolande were very powerful, and France was fighting not just one, but wars.
Duh.
And since France is in a civil war and war with England, they really needed their backing, mm-hmm. because they were close enough and rich enough to help each other out every now and then.
Yeah. I mean, Anjou had so much money, and I mean... I'm sure if Yolande asked, she could also get money from Aragon when it came to supporting the French. So the French were like, yeah, wee, come over here. Yolande started calling herself the Queen of 4 Kingdoms, which again, this is the, you know, she's queen of nothing, but I love.
Dracarys.
Yes, it is giving Dany. Absolutely. I am here for this level of, delusion that she, like, she's just like, I am queen of 4 kingdoms. She said she claimed Aragon, Naples, Sicily, and Jerusalem all under her.
Wow.
I don't really understand the Jerusalem thing of it, but it doesn't matter. We just don't have time. But big clit energy is what I'm getting at here. She's just like, oh yeah, that place. Well, I feel like she would have been like, Narnia, never heard of it. Queen. I'm the queen of that. Like, it's such a Leo thing to do, if I'm being honest.
You know what? You know what? Jerusalem, never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
I might as well claim of it.
But I'm queen. I'm queen.
And Louis loved this about her.
Yeah.
He loved this ambition. And they just seemed to really vibe on each other and this delusional aspect of each other. So I think they were either really in love with each other or just really working on a good relationship or both.
Yeah. Hold up real quick. I'm going to look up real quick and see if I can find Louis' sign. Because I need to know now. I need to know if he was also a fire sign. October 5th. So that's Libra. So no, not...
But air.
But Libras can definitely have a bit of... Can be very ambitious and think very highly of themselves. So I think this works. This works. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so they've got all these titles. They have all these claims. But to their core, just like, you know, how we were talking about when Yolande was coming up, like when she was being raised, her parents were Francophiles. So is Louis. So is Louis, because he's also a grandson or whatever of a French king. They're both descended from John II of France, and they are both really proud of that. They are... Wee monsieur to their core, and they are always going to support France. But France is in a civil war, so what? It's the Spider-Man meme where there's all the Spider-Mans pointing at each other. It's like, what do you do?
What do you
do? Who do we back? Yeah.
And let's give a very quick high level TLDR of the French Civil War, because the French king was this dude named Charles VI, and he had this whole mental breakdown.
Bless his heart.
Probably like years before that, which was horrible timing because the French were fighting the English in 100 years because it was 100 years war.
But it was actually 116 years, but we don't have time.
I know. So civil war broke out because we don't have time for that. And all these different powerful dukes in France thought that they should be regent, which, what? No, stop, guys.
What do you remember about Charles VI when we did the Isabeau of Bavaria episode? What do you think?
Oh, his whole body, he had a piano inside of his
body. What Nathan is saying, he imagined that he ate a glass piano. And so he thought he had been turned into glass. And so he wouldn't let anybody touch him because he would shatter. And so that is the person running maybe the most economically powerful country in the world at the time.
Not a good time.
No. Oh, you sounded like your Kermit voice there. Anyway, so at first, Yolande, like, you okay?
Yes.
Would you like to do some Kermiting for us?
Hi, I'm Yolanda. This is a bad time, y'all.
Anyway, so at first, Yolande was like, well, obviously, we want to align ourselves with the king and queen of France. Whatever they want, that is whose side we want to be on during the Civil War. And so the queen of France at the time is Isabeau of Bavaria, who we have three episodes on. And I will put links to those. I'll put links to those Spotify episodes in our show description if you want to listen to that. But Nathan, when you can't talk shit on the king, who do you talk shit on?
The queen.
Yes.
I mean, it's so convenient to just...
She's got one of those uteruses.
And it's just floating around and she doesn't know what to do. She's the blame.
Yes. And because people couldn't be like, our king is off his rocker, instead they were just like, our queen's a bitch. But that was fine. And so Isabeau has not gone down in history as being super popular. And I just think that's such bullshit. But anyway.
Yeah. But Yolanda was like, I don't buy it. I think this poor woman is just the victim of a shitty circumstance.
Yes.
Which, hashtag saint.
Yos.
So she meets the queen of France. They've eaten 1413, and the main topic of conversation was a marriage alignment. And at this point, Queen Isabeau had, like, so many sons. And her youngest son, Charles, was then engaged to Yolande's eldest daughter, Marie.
Oh. Yolande wouldn't have been thinking that Marie would become Queen of France from this marriage. Because, like we said, at this time, I think Charles had three older brothers. You know, it's like... No, five older brothers. So it's not like she's not doing this being like, my daughter's going to be queen, you know? But foreshadowing, we'll get to that later. But after this meeting, Yolande took baby Charles, the young prince from France, back to Anjou with her to raise him at her court and to get a good education.
Which was lucky because the next year there was a huge battle against England called the Battle of Agincourt, and France lost hard.
It was a bad time for France.
So Yolande took her kids in that bad time with France and her little baby and son-in-law and got the fuck out of town to super south France.
Yeah, or like modern day France, like super, super south, super away from the fighting. Unfortunately, the next year saw a lot of death that affected Yolande and her family. Back to back, like within the span of 2 years, two of Charles's brothers died. And so now Charles, little baby Charles that's living with Yolande in the south of France, he is the new heir apparent, which in France they call the new Dauphin. He's a new dolphin. He is Flipper.
And sadly, in 1417, Yolanda's husband, Louis, died. Their oldest child was 13, and the youngest was only 3.
Oh, my God. I kind of love for her that she only had 5 kids in 10 years. So that means she wasn't pregnant for the whole 10 years straight, like we see so often in this show. But also to have a 3-year-old and then your husband die, like, that's... I mean, it's never good when your husband dies, but, like, that's just so much That's a lot to deal with, yeah.
Yeah, and in her son's minority, she's now regent of all of the lands.
And plus all the other countries that she rules in delusion.
From France.
But yeah, and now she also has the next king of France living with her. She's got a lot of responsibilities, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. So we don't have any information on how she grieved Louis, though we have to assume she did. They've been married for like 17 years, and there seems to be some genuine affection. They loved each other at some point.
I get the vibe they loved each other. Like, actually yeah. loved each other. I do.
Yes. And he died at home with Yolande and the family by his side. So that's nice. And so many women at this time sent their husbands off to war and never saw them alive again.
Yeah.
So count your chickens before they hatch.
I mean, it's a
southern thing.
It's a small luxury. Not a whole bunch of other people got to actually be with their husbands while they died. So at least she, I don't know.
Yeah.
But now she is a very busy woman. I don't know you. I don't know about you, but like in times in my life where I've had substantial grief, I throw myself into projects. If I am busy at work, if I am busy with the podcast, if I am busy with creative things, I don't have time to think about what I'm sad about.
Lifing.
Yes. So I think that's why. Well, also, she just didn't have a choice. She was busy now. But I kind of feel like I get the vibe that it was kind of a bit of a relief to her to be so, have so many things to do to like take her mind off of her grief. Because she did not take her responsibilities as regent of Anjou and Piedmont and all those other places and pretend queen of Naples or whatever. She took all of that so fucking seriously. And she's also now got the future king of France in her care. And she was just like busy, 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 busy. And then she gets a note that's like, technically, he's not the future king of France anymore.
Wait, what?
Right. Yes. So she went, pourquoi is probably what she said. But
yeah, probably.
What you need to know is that the king and queen of France, so Isabel of Bavaria and Charles VI, they had entered into this agreement called the Treaty of Troyes. And basically, it named the English king as the king of France's heir. Being like, when I go, your heirs will then rule
the
France.
Drama.
So
why
did they sign that? And we do get into it in our Isabel of Bavaria episodes. I really feel like they were just backed into a corner. And it was like, do we keep letting all of our people die? Or do we just make some concessions? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because for this story, what we need to know is that Yolande got that note that he's no longer heir and the English kings are the heirs now. And she saw red. She was fucking pissed. She was like, oh, hell no.
She took it personally. Mm-hmm. And personally, I don't blame her. We do believe Isabeau of Bavaria was doing this shit out of desperation. But for a woman as fierce and hard-headed as Yolande, she didn't get it.
No.
She couldn't fucking understand that.
She didn't want to. She was like, no.
I wouldn't want to either. Yeah. Like, how dare you? But, I mean, put yourself in her shoes.
Yeah.
Her whole life has been fighting for a title. Mm-hmm. Her title is Queen of Aragon. Her title is Queen of Naples. And then her husband, who's been right there fighting with her for 17 years, is now dead.
Yeah. And now this little boy who she has been caring for the last 4 years is stripped of his title. And her daughter, she's like, my daughter's going to be Queen of France. No. Now your daughter is stripped of a title too. And I think that is just Yolande being like, fuck that. And just, absolutely not under my fucking roof. You know what I mean?
No. And Isabeau of Bavaria writes Yolande and is like, hey, I need you to send my son back to me. We're calling off this engagement. I can't have anyone starting a war with his name. We need him back in Paris. Like, ugh.
Yolande writes back. And actually, Nathan, I think this would be a good time for some Queen's Podcast Theater. So Yolande writes back. Would you like to do the honors of reading her response?
I shall.
Acting!
We have not nurtured and cherished this one for you, to make him die like his brothers, or to go mad like his father, or to become English like you.
Oh, shoot.
I keep him for my own. Come and take him away if you dare.
Shoot. She's hitting personal with that one.
She ain't playing around.
Isabeau did not dare. Isabeau went, you know what? Never mind. okay. So before we wrap up how that all went down, let's take a quick break.
Okie dokie.
Hey, y'all. Spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley. Not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Hello everyone, it's Takuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is... Well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.
It's 1422.
Yes.
And it's another big year for another big moment and another big life of Yolande and her family.
Yeah.
So Yolande has a daughter named Marie, formerly married.
Yes, they have now actually been married. It's no longer a betrothal. They are man and wife.
And then a few months later, King Henry of England died. And then Charles VI of France died of piano crumbling.
He was too glassy.
Ugh. And then a month later, she's now the mother-in-law of the King of France. And how can you not acknowledge that she has a lot going on?
She has a lot on her plate. She might need to circle back to you after the new year.
And maybe she needs a nap or two.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, the new king of England is Henry V. And so he's like, okay, well, I'm king of France now since that other king died. To which Yolande said, not under my fucking watch. And let's take a second to acknowledge that she is not queen of anything except for delusion. But she had so much power that if she was like, no, you're not, a bunch of people paid attention. Do you know what I mean?
And the fact that a king couldn't recognize that.
I mean, he was like, okay, little girl, sit back in your corner. And she's like, oh.
Okay, little boy.
Watch me.
Step outside.
Exactly.
Of me. Exactly. See that. Our girl is wheeling and dealing like a boss that she was.
Yes.
First, she emails the King of Scotland and is like, hey, this guy's fucking English, right?
And she was like, do you hate the English? He was like, I fucking hate the English. And she was like, the enemy.
Vive la France!
Vive la France! The enemy of my enemy is also my friend. Let's fuck this shit up. Yeah.
Hey, toxic masculinity.
Yeah, so she becomes buddy-buddy with the King of Scotland, being like, come over to France and let's fuck with the English. And he was like, yeah, lassie, let's do it. Let's, absolutely.
And then obviously she's got the army of Anju on her side.
Yes, yes.
And it's no stretch that she could probably get some of her relatives on Aragorn on her side in her army too, maybe.
Probably. And maybe. She goes to the Duke of Brittany and was like, hey, you know, the Scottish are on their way. Do you really want to fight with us and the Scottish? And the Duke of Brittany was like, nah. So we just flipped sides. So she's just getting people to change political alignments left, right, and center. Like, she's that persuasive. I love that.
She's got the power, and now she's got God on her side.
Oh, God? What do you mean? She's got God. What?
She's got it, and it's called Joan of Arc entering the chat. Slide into my DMs. It's Joan of Arc.
Maybe you've heard of her. Joan of...
I didn't know her. What?
She doesn't even go here. Joan of Arc.
She does.
She does. I'm sure Joan of Arc will get her own episode someday. But no, so Joan of Arc was this peasant girl that said she talked to saints and that she talked to God. And they told her, no, do not give France to the English. Charles needs to be the next king. And so she's like, well, if God said so. And so this gets to Yolande, and Yolande is like, oh, I can work with this.
And after vetting her, in which they even did a test to make sure she was like a virgin, barf.
Gross. I feel so bad for
her. Not fair.
Gross. That's so gross that they used to like test people to see if they were virgins. But no, Yolande said, she was like, I believe this girl. This girl says that God is talking to her. I believe her. Let's put this girl in front of the army and let's kill some English dudes.
That is how this powerful woman was.
She left no crumbs.
And she ate them all.
She ate them all.
There were a lot of people that were like, are we really trusting our military guidance to this girl that hears voices?
Sounds a little bit of cock-a-doodle-doodle
like,
to me.
And people were like, if Yolande says she's speaking to God, maybe she's speaking to God and we don't need to ask questions. So
that's how powerful.
That's how the.
Yeah.
That's who she was. That's who she was.
That is the level of influence she carried, which I just love that. Meanwhile, she put Charles into king training. Do you remember her bit with her mom where it was like, the montage of you better work, bitch. That's what she did with Charles. She was like, you are going to learn who's who in the royal families. You are about to learn all these languages. You're going to learn diplomacy. This is how you treat people. This is how you work and wheel and deal diplomacy. Yeah, it just reminds me so much of what she went through with her mom.
And eventually Charles was crowned in 1429 after 7 long years
of
fighting. Could we have done this without his tough-as-nails mother-in-law?
I don't fucking think so. I think if Yolande had not been pushing him forward, he would not have done this on himself. For himself. You know what I mean?
I do.
All the regions of France were like, let me flip. You know what? Never mind. I think Yolande is the one to go with.
Until they were finally united and Charles was the undisputed king of France. This Joan of Arc character is problematic. And they were like, wait, is she though?
Speaking of which, spoiler alert, things don't go great for Joan of Arc. But I couldn't find anything that spoke towards if Yolande did anything to try to save Joan of Arc. I was really hoping that I would find something with Yolande, like being like, no, don't burn her at the stake. But
why would she?
Because
like, she had no reason.
Because Joan of Arc helped her out. Of course she had a reason, but it doesn't seem like she did, which fucking sucks. But oh well. Once Charles was firmly on the throne and her son was old enough to run Anjou on his own, she retired, which I feel like deserved. She deserves to fucking retire. And so she retires from court and just like, goes to like her own place. No photos, no appointments. But Nathan.
But she was behind the scenes.
Yeah. Do you think she actually quit her political work?
No.
No. Of course she not. She was
pulling strings with the kings.
Yeah.
That's what that was.
Yes.
And she was pulling strings with the king to get grandkids.
Political marriages. Signing up on law. Just like making sure things, like she was from behind the scenes. Technically retired, but still working.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
Like, that's, she's great.
Yeah.
She went out of her way to befriend mistresses of dukes in France and convince them to be her spies.
I love that, because we also, when we did the Catherine de' Medici episode, we talked about how she did the same thing, where she befriended mistresses and stuff and, like, turned them into spies. So, yeah, Yolande was like, oh, you're someone's mistress? What do you know? And she actually had a woman that worked for her that ended up being her son-in-law's main mistress, everybody's favorite titty, Agnes Sorel.
Surprise,
surprise. Surprise, surprise.
Yolande of Aragon, the would-be queen of so many places, died in 1442 at the age of 58. Her funeral, the King of France wrote her a beautiful epitaph that basically said that he owed this to her.
He owed his rule to her in his epitaph. Yeah.
So let's talk about legacy.
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, a future queen of England was her granddaughter, Wars of the Roses, Margaret of Anjou. And she would go on to kind of set the precedent about how women could be rock stars in the world of diplomacy. So,
and not be silent.
Yes.
Speak up.
So
speak up.
Let's raise a glass to Yolande of Aragon. Cheers, bitches.
Have you ever wished that you had a direct line to your pediatrician to ask all the questions that constantly crop up while parenting? We sure have. That's why we launched the Bites of Health podcast. Every morning, we'll answer a commonly asked pediatric question in 5 minutes or less. You can tune in while you're making your second cup of coffee or from the school drop-off line. So be sure to tune in to Bites of Health, streaming now.